Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers. As always, I'm your host, Chris Manning, from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, we're going to preview the Clippers game. The Cavs and the Clippers take place Thursday night, TNT, 8 p.m. Eastern time. Big game. It's LeBron, obviously, against one of his best friends. It's two of the league's three best teams playing against each other. There's just so much to like about this game. To help break it down, I have Lucas Hahn. He's the editor of Clips Nation, SB Nation's really, really good Clippers blog. Lucas, how's it going?
I'm good, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing good. So, big game. Clippers, obviously, I think, are probably the second or third best team in the league right now, the way they've played. Before we get into some of the nitty-gritty of the Clippers and this game, how good do you think the Clippers have actually been this year? And is this the best version of them we have seen, at least on so far in the Doc, CP3, Blake, DeAndre era?
We've seen the best and the worst of the Clippers. So in the first 10-ish games, the Clippers were about they weren't as dominant. They were more dominant than they've ever been together with this grouping. They were legitimately historically playing at a ridiculously high level. If you take just like the first 15 games and put it in Basketball Reference's simple rating system, they had the best simple rating of any team of all time by like 1.5 points, which is a ridiculous margin. Yeah. So obviously it's only a 15-game stretch, and then they really came back and came crashing down to earth, and it's almost like they're not playing, or they're not playing hard, or they're indifferent. And I think that's something that scares people the most about this team, is that they really, as a unit over the last 5 years, have been prone to letdowns. In the biggest moments, losing big games against Golden State, a big rival, or, you know, blowing game six against Houston, blowing a second round series against OKC. Right now, they were at the top of the league, they were doing well, and what did they do? They lost to three teams that were below 500, all missing their best player.
Yeah.
So
that's not ideal by any means.
And yeah, and you know, it happens. It's an 82 game season, but for it to happen three games in a row is almost like it's unbelievable, kind of, to see it, how much they've struggled in three consecutive games against, you know, Detroit and Indiana are okay teams. Brooklyn's pretty bad, but Indiana with Paul George is not a good team, and Detroit without Reggie Jackson is okay. They're an okay team. They play well, but it's not – they shouldn't be beating these Clippers by double digits. So it's kind of disturbing to see how it's gone down in the last week or so.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's interesting about that is, like, you score 70 points against the Pacers, which is just, like, crazy when I saw that. Haven't watched that game, but I feel like I have to just because of how absurd that is. The Nets game is at least just one of those games where I feel like they played pretty well. I mean, you shouldn't give up that many points even in overtime to the Nets, probably. But, like, Sean Kilpatrick just kind of, like, went crazy in that game. And, you know, they do have good...
But the yeah, thing is, ahead. They... Kilpatrick just got kind of whatever he wanted. So yeah. It wasn't that he was unguardable, but it was like the Clippers were indifferent, especially when he went crazy in the fourth quarter. They just didn't defend him. It was like Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan, that combination on the defensive pick and roll, just kind of lackadaisical.
Yeah.
And he just got to whatever spot on the floor he wanted, which is how a guy who's not very good, who only shot like 40% from the field in that game, can still end up with 30 plus points because he got every single shot he wanted every time, right down to the last minute of double overtime when Chris Paul didn't fight through a screen and DeAndre Jordan played lazy defense and fouled him and gave up an and one on the back end, and just all game long.
Yeah, that's certainly like not great, but I mean, do you think as they play a team like the Cavs, a team like them that has, you know, several star players, that is near the top of the league, that by all accounts, like, is it, you know, by everything we know right now, is a title contender, do you think that this is a game that brings them back into the peak form that we saw?
I hope so. But I don't think, just from a philosophical perspective, I don't think it's a switch that you can flip. I think that they'll try harder in this game than they've tried lately because, like you said, it's a game that you get up for. And you have the reason you have letdown games against Indiana without Paul George is because it can be hard to get up for that kind of game. Mm-hmm. And this, obviously, if you can't get up to play against the defending champions, then when are you going to get up? But I worry that even with the energy there, the sharpness won't be there. You know, to really come together and beat, unless Cleveland plays awfully too, the Clippers are going to need to be sharp and focused to win a tough game against another championship contender like this. Where maybe against Brooklyn, you could have gotten away with just being focused even if you weren't playing great. Mm-hmm. You really need to be focused and playing great against the Cavaliers. I think they can get the focus, but I'm not sure that you can just conjure up sharp, precise offense and defensive rotations when you haven't been doing it for the last week.
Yeah, that's certainly fair. Let's look at some of this position by position or matchup by matchup, because there are so many really interesting matchups in this game. And I think the fun place to start is Kyrie Irving versus Chris Paul. I mean, this is two elite point guards, two guys that are very good at their craft in different ways. I would say CP3 is definitely like ahead of Kyrie in terms of if you're going player versus player. But how good has CP3 been this year? Like, you look at the stats, he's been great. I think, like, I know they've struggled of late, but he's just been so good and maybe the best he's been in some ways. I mean, how good do you think CP3's been this year?
Well, I think the Clippers this year have gone as Chris Paul has gone. So when they were great at the beginning of the year, it was probably the best that he's ever played as a Clipper. It was, you know, how people make the point God joke.
Yeah.
He was point God night in and night out. He was like this kind of transcendent basketball figure. He just controlled the games. It was amazing. And then in these last three games, he's been almost the most disinterested person of the bunch. And he's played awfully in these last three games. He was outplayed by Ish Smith and then Rodney Stuckey and then Sean Kilpatrick in back-to-back-to-back games. That's not something you should be saying about Chris Paul ever. So it...
Yeah, it's not great.
it's really bad when, you know, it's just frankly that's what's happened in the last three games. And I'm a huge Chris Paul fan and supporter from what he's done for the team in the last 5 years, but it's just frankness to say that he got outplayed by those three guys in these three games. And that's troubling for the Clippers, because if he's going to get outplayed, you know, the Clippers have a lot of weaknesses. Chris Paul is maybe their biggest strength. Mm-hmm. If Chris Paul is going to get outplayed by Sean Kilpatrick, it's hard to make up those points elsewhere in the lineup if you're losing that point guard matchup. Mm-hmm. So that's something I would watch, at least in this game, is to see how much does Chris Paul produce versus what Kyrie Irving produces. Because if Kyrie Irving wins this matchup, I don't know if the Clippers can really hang in this game, because I don't know where else, against really most teams, not just the Cavaliers, where else do the Clippers win games if they're not winning games, or at least holding steady at the point guard position? You know, against Brooklyn, you know, to keep going back to this last game, Brooke Lopez and Sean Kilpatrick outscored DeAndre Jordan and Chris Paul by 17 points. The rest of the guys on the Clippers probably aren't outscoring the rest of the guys on any other team by 17.
Right.
So you need the Clippers really need the guys at the top to step up in a way that they haven't done recently.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really looking forward to seeing how this matchup sort of plays out, just because I think Chris Paul can test Kyrie in very specific ways. And, like, I think Kyrie is going to be fine on offense. Like, I think he's skilled enough, even if Chris Paul's playing super locked in, to get his, because I think he's just that good on offense. But I think when you look at the other end of the floor, the way that the Clippers play with Chris Paul handling the ball so much, with all the other things they do, I wonder if the Cavs have to move Kyrie off of Chris Paul in this game. Like, I wonder if we see J.R. Smith or his alter ego in the ski mask, or Amon Shumpert, or any of the other guys that they may use, or if it's LeBron and crunch time, because of the Clippers' wing issues. I mean, you have J.J. Redick, but I personally would rather have Kyrie chasing around J.J. Redick probably than defending a Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, or Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan pick and roll. Like, I think that, like, if you're the Clippers, like, you probably attack Kyrie a lot, no? Like, that's something we'll see.
Yeah, but I think, you know, and this is something that is normal for people who haven't watched J.J. Redick play 200 games in the last few years, but it's actually not uncommon for teams to put their best defender on J.J. because the Clippers' offense is more based around what J.J. Redick does than what Chris Paul or Blake Griffin or DeAndre Jordan do. So everything they do is based off of the gravity that he has as he comes around screens and creates spacing and timing for Chris and Blake to do their thing. And if you resist his gravity, if you don't let him suck the defense in when he's moving off of screens, then he's going to hit shots at a league best rate. So I think that J.J. Redick could probably torch Kyrie worse than Chris Paul would, in a sense, because what's the kind of thing that Chris Paul does? He handles the ball, he comes off of screens, and then it's about team defense. Everything about defending Chris Paul is team defense. You hedge, you recover, you trap, you switch, depending on the play and the situation and the coaching call. J.J. Redick, it takes an extreme individual effort. When the Clippers played the Spurs, Kawhi Leonard guards J.J. Redick. He doesn't guard Chris Paul, which I think is really interesting and kind of an amazing sign of respect from Greg Popovich towards what Redick does. And that's why my question when you said Irving might not guard Paul is, who's he going to guard? Because unless you put him on Luka Mbamute, which you probably could do, I don't think he could stay with J.J. Redick. I think it would actually be even worse for the Cavaliers than putting him on Chris Paul. But what's interesting is that what the Clippers have done this year that they've never done before is Chris Paul might not spend a bunch of time guarding Kyrie Irving. They've been saving Chris Paul on defense, at least for the first three quarters of games, and letting other guys run at these great guards around the league. Now, Mbamute won't guard Kyrie because Mbamute is going to be guarding LeBron, but I think you'll see a lot of Raymond Felton and Austin Rivers guarding Kyrie, saving Chris Paul's legs throughout the game, and then really down the stretch we're going to see these two guys go head-to-head in the fourth quarter if it's still close.
I like that strategic move for CP3 because it saves him, like, more during a regular season. Like, of course, yeah. In the playoffs, I assume he would, like, take on a Russell Westbrook or a Kyrie or a Curry, like, for a full game for the most part, like, when the season, like, gets to that point. But right now, like, you don't need to burn his energy, like, having him trying to guard Kyrie pick and rolls for 40 minutes. Like, that's a really smart point. I hadn't really thought of that.
Yeah, and if you can save Chris Paul even for 8 minutes in this game and then 12 minutes when they play the Suns in a few weeks, and, you know, that kind of thing adds up, especially for a guy like Chris Paul who, frankly, gets injured with ticky-tack things a lot, you know, mm-hmm. jammed fingers and twisted knees and stuff like that. So anything that takes him away from 5 or 10 plays just helps his body over the course of an 82-game season. That's something that Doc's really put an emphasis on this year, and it's part of the reason why Luka Mbamute is still in the starting lineup, because no matter who the Clippers – where, no matter what position the star of the other team plays, Mbamute slides around. So he'll guard Damian Lillard, he'll guard Russell Westbrook, and then he'll move over to guard a guy like LeBron tonight. And if LeBron goes out, you know, I'm not sure what the Cavaliers' substitution patterns are going to be, but if LeBron subs out of the game early, or maybe he has foul trouble, then I wouldn't be surprised to see Mbamute guarding Kyrie for that stretch. So it's definitely an interesting dynamic trying to save you take this guy who's seen as, like, if not an amazing defender, a very good defender, and definitely a very tough defender, and they've kind of been putting him in a back seat all season long. But yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a smart strategy. I think it's good that they've been doing it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. The LeBron thing's interesting too, because if you look at how the Cavs and Clippers match up, I think the obvious place you see the Cavs have an advantage is at the small forward position. I don't think telling you that and saying that the Clippers are at a disadvantage at small forward and probably a pretty big one is like news to you, I would guess. So if you're the Clippers, like, you obviously have Mbamute, you have Wesley Johnson, Paul Pierce is basically a four at this point, right? So, like, what are you doing to defend
Wesley
LeBron
Johnson is too.
Oh yeah. So like, what are you? Yeah. So what are you doing to defend LeBron in this game? Like, what's your strategy?
It's going to be Mbamute. I wouldn't be surprised if Mbamute subs in and out with LeBron in this game, which is something that Doc Rivers has gone to before. Mbamute, now you're right. The Clippers have a big disadvantage at small forward. Mbamute is a very, very, very good defender. Against teams that aren't as good as the Cavs are, his defense has swung entire games. So there were games last season where, for example, he'd guard a guy like Anthony Davis and just freeze Anthony Davis for 8 minutes. Mm-hmm. And if you freeze Anthony Davis for 8 minutes, like, you know, 0 for 5 shooting and 2 turnovers in that 8-minute stretch, you freeze the Pelicans for 8 minutes. They're not doing anything in those 8 minutes. Same thing, he did it against the Hawks with Paul Millsap. Now, he's not going to freeze LeBron. You can't do that against LeBron. But if there's anyone in the league who can do their best to maybe try and slow LeBron down, or at least not give LeBron anything easy, it would be Mbamute. Mbamute, statistically, is one of the best points per possession allowed defenders in the league. I actually think he might have been number one in the league last year, and he might be number one in the league again this year. Mm-hmm. And that's being matched up against superstars every night because he starts at small forward and guards 1 through 4. He's not going to freeze out LeBron. I think anyone who thinks he's going to do that is silly, but he'll make LeBron work more than Wesley Johnson ever would. Wesley Johnson would get burned and LeBron would get dunks. I don't think those kind of plays are going to happen a lot. I think LeBron's going to have to work for what he gets against Mbamute. And he's still going to get 20 or 25 points, and Mbamute's probably going to have 4 or 6. But that's about as well as the Clippers could hope for. I think if you play anyone else against LeBron, Wesley Johnson might get 12 or 15 points, but LeBron's going to get 40. Wesley started one game at small forward for the Clippers last year against the Jazz. It was his first chance in the starting lineup early in the year. He guarded Gordon Hayward, and Gordon Hayward went off for like 40-something, and Wesley never started again.
Yeah.
So he can't guard elite wing scorers, and with a counterpart like J.J. Redick out there, the Clippers small forward needs to guard elite wing scorers. So it's definitely going to be Mbamute.
Yeah, that's interesting that he would match him minute for minute, because like that there are issues with that, right? Like, I mean, offensively, like, how much this year is he, if at all, I guess, in your opinion, like, is how much is he affecting their offense, and how much when he's on the floor is it a problem that he's there? I mean, it's the regular season, so it's not quite as big of a deal, but like, is in your mind, like, is this something like you're seeing sort of the effects of it at all?
Well, I think it was something that we saw a lot last year, because the Clippers would run a nice set. They'd swing the ball to Luke in the corner, and he'd catch it with about 10 feet of space, hold it, and pass it back. And, you know, when you work hard on a set and you're passing the ball, trying to beat the defense for 15 or 20 seconds, and you swing it to a guy wide open in the corner because you finally caught the defense in a bad position and he doesn't take the shot, it cripples the play. Like, it really hurts. You know, that's basically a turnover. Mm-hmm. He hasn't done that this year. So what he's done is about 1.5 to 2 times a game in about 20 minutes, he'll take a corner three. Only when he's really wide open. But when he's really wide open, he'll take it. And he's shooting, you know, since it's so early in the season, it's fluctuating. But it's somewhere in the upper 30s or near 40%, which, it looks to be relatively sustainable because of the type of shot he's taking. Corner threes, wide open, all the time in the world. And he's been, you know, he practiced that all summer because he knew this was going to be his role. So it's not unrealistic that he'd hit 36, 38% from that area. And I think that that's enough. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it a little bit because what's happened is teams have started closing out on him really hard. So they'll still play off him, but when he gets the ball, they'll really sprint at him and he'll pump fake and get in the lane. And then, you know, he's not a super skilled offensive player, but he's 6'8 and he's been in the NBA for, you know, 10 years. He can dribble the ball a couple times and make an open dunk. And he can dribble the ball a couple times and throw it within like the 8-mile radius that DeAndre Jordan can catch the basketball. So he hasn't been a liability on offense this year, which is something that I fully expected him to be. You know, I thought he would really hurt the offense. I thought the Clippers were going to spend all year playing with different options, you know, trying to go back to Johnson or Allen Anderson or three-guard lineups, anything to find someone who would maybe be able to work on both ends, even if they didn't defend as well as Mbah Mute. Mm-hmm. And Mbah Mute's been good on offense. Not great, but he does exactly what he needs to do. He doesn't hold the ball when he's wide open. He makes open shots at an okay rate. And when he gets closed out, he can make the most simple of pump fake one dribble plays.
Yeah. Rush into Old Navy today for up to 50% off store wide. Get dresses from $15 for women, $12 for girls, plus up to 75% off clearance for the whole family right now at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/16 to 10/20, select styles only.
And that's really all I need him to do. Like that's
yeah, enough. That's what Matt Barnes did for a few years here, and he was the best small forward offensively the Clippers have had in the Chris Paul era. Even Wesley Johnson, you know, who people look at Wesley Johnson as like the more offensively competent option. Johnson doesn't really do much more than that. He shoots open threes. He does it at more, you know, what's open for Luke Mbah Mute is not the same as what's open for Wesley Johnson. He's able to get more shots off, but Wesley Johnson doesn't do anything with the ball. The Clippers haven't really had a small forward who does something with the ball because they don't need that. They really don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly – that makes like a ton of sense when you think about it. And you look at like what they sort of are as a team, and it's just like that's always been the position where they obviously have a ton of other talent, but it's like that one spot is always like where something is just missing because it's really hard to build like an NBA team when you have – like around three guys when they're all commanding that much money. And obviously the guy that I think is the match I'm most looking forward to tomorrow, honestly, is Kevin Love and Blake Griffin. Like they're so different. Like Blake's the high flyer, Love's a little bit more to the ground. But they're gonna go against each other, and I wonder if the Cavs will have Love defend DeAndre instead of and have Thompson defend Griffin. I think that might happen. But I mean, how good has Blake been this year? Like on a scale of like let's say 1 to 10, like how good has he been this year? And he's obviously been healthy, and that's certainly a good thing for you guys.
Well, I guess on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm not sure what a 10 is, but he's maybe been.
Let's say like 10 is like meeting like your wildest expectations of what he could be.
Okay, so maybe like an 8.5. He's definitely been very good. I'm not going to sit here and complain about anything he's done, but we heard in the offseason that he really worked. You know, he's been shooting a ton of mid-range jump shots for the last few years. Mm-hmm. I think 2 years ago, his last fully healthy season, he shot like 500 mid-range jump shots, which is a crazy amount for a guy who's not a great shooter. But he's been working on it and working on it, and what the big narrative was coming into this year is that he finally stepped back a couple more steps and he's going to take a couple threes a game this year. Which makes sense because he shoots, you know, between 40 and 45% from the mid-range. So if he can step back and shoot even 30% from deep, you're getting more points per possession than 40% from mid-range. But not only has he not made his threes this year, he hasn't really shot them. So he's only shooting 22% this year, which sounds really bad, but he's 4 of 18. It's like we haven't even seen enough of a sample size to know if he's not any better or what. So that's been kind of disappointing. And his assists are down because he's just doing a little less offensively. But I'm still happy. I'm happy he's back. He's completely healthy. He's conserving himself, but he still showed off, you know, a couple of really high flying dunks. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 1 to 10, 8, 8.5. He hasn't been outstanding, but he's been perennial all-star Blake Griffin level, which you can't complain.
No, like he's great. Like as much as we maybe wish he was shooting threes, aesthetically, like he's really good when he does, even when he doesn't do that. Like he's fantastic.
And he's aside from being good, he's just so entertaining to watch.
Yes.
Because he's so skilled with the ball for a big man. The only times that it can get kind of ugly is when he's like right in the low post, because he gets, I don't know, it's almost like even after all these years, he's uncomfortable on the block. Like if you put him in like a 5 foot post up and he's playing against a guy who he can't move, mm-hmm. He can't pick which shoulder to go over. He's not sure what move he wants to do. He gets really uncomfortable. But if you get him in deep post position, a lot of times on fast breaks, he'll run ahead of the play and get post up right under the rim, and he has a bunch of good finishes there. Or somewhere in the mid post where he can use his speed and dribbling skill a little bit more. It's just so, so beautiful to watch him play basketball because he sees everything. He passes so well. He's so skilled, and he's so, so athletic.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he's just awesome. Like, I love watching him play, and I really want to see how the Cavs defend him. I mean, in the other aspect of this, Channing Frye, for you Cavs fans out there, he's going to be back tomorrow. Love and Frye as a duo, like, neither of them can really defend Blake that well, and that's going to be sort of something I wonder if they use that duo, which they do use somewhat in this game. This is, like, and this kind of leads me to this question I have. One of the things the Cavs have done this year is use Love and use Channing Frye to bring out centers. They'd like to pull big guys out of the paint. It clears driving lane for LeBron and Kyrie and everyone else. With DeAndre Jordan there, and with you know, everyone else, have like Mo Buckets and who, you know, whoever else are going to play in the front court with Blake and DeAndre, how do you counter what the Cavs would like to do with Channing Frye? Let's say if DeAndre's on the floor, like what is the counter to him having to guard Channing Frye? Do you maybe try to get him off Channing Frye?
Well, I think the first thing they do is definitely try to get him off of Frye, because DeAndre is the Clippers, not only their best rim protector, but one of their only rim protectors. Even Blake Griffin isn't much of a rim protector. Mm-hmm. So what they definitely try to do is put Blake on, for example, if Frye and Thompson were playing together, they'd put Blake on Frye and DJ on Thompson and try to keep DJ closer to the basket. But failing that, let's say if Frye was playing, you know, small ball and LeBron's at the four, they could either go small in that situation, put Blake at the five, and really terrorize the Cavs with offensive skill, because if you go with a lineup like Paul, Redick, Crawford, and Bamute and Griffin, the spacing is going to be very good. Four of those five guys can put the ball on the floor and make a play. And so you're worse defensively, but you're picking more points up offensively in that case. And what they will probably try to do for stretches is just keep DeAndre out there, because even though your rim protection suffers, DeAndre's really, he's not just a big guy, but obviously he's a very athletic guy. He has quick feet. And so he's able to stay with guys on the perimeter in a way that maybe a lot of traditional rim protectors wouldn't be able to. Mm-hmm. He definitely wouldn't have an issue guarding Frye. It wouldn't be hard for him to stay with Frye. It would just be that he wouldn't be able to stay with him and protect the rim. And it's interesting that you bring this up, because one of the ways that the Pacers really killed the Clippers is that the Pacers' two centers are Miles Turner and Al Jefferson, who are both guys who step out and shoot. And DeAndre never adjusted. So he stayed in and helped anyway. It wasn't that he was getting burned by these guys. It was just that whether it was him making a mistake or, you know, a schematic misstep, he was staying in the paint to protect the rim no matter who he was guarding or where they were. Mm-hmm. You obviously can't, you know, it didn't work against Miles Turner, but it's definitely not going to work against Kevin Love or Channing Frye, because those guys are both amazing shooters, where Miles Turner can shoot, but he's not Kevin Love or Channing Frye. So the Clippers would have to adjust, but once they make that adjustment, yeah, the lane is clear, but DeAndre is going to be able to stay with those guys. I think they might, in that situation, try to go small so they'd be able to score more on the other end. But Doc walks a fine line when it comes to teams messing around with lineups like that, where he will make adjustments, but he also really doesn't want to let Cleveland dictate how he uses DeAndre.
Yeah.
In the sense that if there's a certain stretch out there where he sees something, he has no problem making a sub and going to a smaller lineup that he thinks will work better. But ultimately, he wants to make Cleveland guard DeAndre before he worries about finding a guy who can fill in for DeAndre. Because once teams are able to make tricks like that and make you take one of your best players off the floor, your lineup might make more sense in theory, but you're one of your best players on the bench. It's the same problem the Clippers have with Golden State. When they go small, if you pull Blake or DeAndre out of the game, you just pulled $20 million out of the game. You said $20 million is not a big part of our game plan.
Which is like, so what, you're spending all that money, and like they're clearly great with them on the floor. Like, just exactly. At the end of the day, like, they're great with those guys on the floor. And at a certain point, like, you wonder, like, with Channing Frye, DeAndre might be able to score on him. Like, DeAndre Jordan is by no means like a great post scorer. Like, he is like, has, you know, like, kind of basic skills down there, for lack of a better way of describing it, but he's really, really athletic. He's really good in the pick and roll. And Channing Frye has been pretty bad if you look at his per possession numbers this year. He hasn't been a good defender.
Well, and one thing that we talk about a lot with DeAndre, you know, everyone's familiar with the concept of spacing. Depending on how good of a shooter you are, you space the floor more. The defense has to stretch to cover you. What, and I don't know if you maybe have heard me or someone else use this term, but what we've been talking about with DeAndre in the last year or so is vertical spacing.
Yeah.
Where he gets, when he sets a screen and rolls to the basket, he can jump so high to finish those lobs that the center that's defending him, in this case Channing Frye, because he's not super athletic, would have to basically stay elbow distance away from DeAndre as he rolls, which means he can't hedge on Chris Paul. So either he doesn't stay that close and DeAndre's vertical spacing is good enough that you just throw the ball up and he gets it, or he stays close to DeAndre and he basically hugs him so that he can't get up and get that lob. And now Chris Paul has basically anything he wants in the mid-range game. So what that does is it forces teams to bring an extra defender. And once you're bringing an extra defender, now the Clippers are playing the game that they want to play with J.J. Redick and Blake Griffin on the weak side, and Jamal Crawford might be in there. So I think Doc, you know, there are definitely situations where Doc will adjust to what another team is doing and go small. But I think ultimately what the strategy would be is, or at least what I would hope to see Doc use in that kind of situation, is to basically say, we're going to do the best we can in the tough spot that you're putting us in on defense. But when we have the ball, we're going to put you in an even tougher spot.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. Let's wrap it up on this question. Just generally, like, with everything that's happened and just generally what we know about the league and what we know about the other teams, like, where do you think the Clippers fall in the hierarchy of the league's teams this year so far?
I think they have to be three. The Spurs have a better record at the time that we're recording this, but they're losing to the Mavericks right now as we speak. So they might be tied with the Clippers in record going into tomorrow's game. And the Clippers blew out the Spurs in San Antonio, and the Clippers have been just overall more impressive. They've played a tougher schedule. They have a better point differential. So I think there's a divide between where the Clippers are and where the Spurs are right now. But I think there's also clearly a divide between where the Cavaliers and Warriors are and where the Clippers are. And that might have not been the case after 10 games of the season, but even before this current losing streak, the Clippers really slipped a lot. They weren't defending as well as they'd been. They were letting up way more points. They let up 100 points in like almost every game for a significant stretch. They were allowing more than 100 points, except for Brooklyn in a game where Brooklyn sat everybody and said, we're going to throw this game and try to beat the Lakers tomorrow instead. So they've just been letting up crazy amount of points, and the offense was good enough to make up for it, but even then they weren't playing at that elite level. So I think there's definitely a divide. I think the Clippers are three right now. And you know what? If they really want to prove to people that they aren't three, they have two great chances. This game against Cleveland and a week against Golden State. If they can be competitive in these games, you know, not lose by 25 to Cleveland tomorrow night, and hopefully win at least one of them, it sends a message. If the Clippers play a really hard-fought game with Cleveland tomorrow and the Clippers win, it sends a message. We can beat this team when we're both playing hard and playing well. Same thing with Golden State, because you know both teams are going to get up for that game. If the Clippers are able to win a hard-fought game, now all of a sudden they're a legitimate challenger. And I think for all the talk and hype, until they prove it on the court, it's hard to see anyone as a legitimate challenger to Cleveland and Golden State in the league right now.
Yeah. And let me ask you this to wrap this up. How much do you think it has to be a playoff success to change the perception of the Clippers, if at all?
Well, I'm not sure, I guess, what the perception is and how it would change with how they do this year and if it would be wrong, because yeah, everyone says, yeah, if they're so good, but they haven't gotten out of the second round. Okay. Excuse me, but they've been good, but they haven't necessarily been the type of team that should be getting out of the second round every year. They've been in that, like, somewhere in the top four in the West with Golden State, San Antonio, and Oklahoma City. So it's not really outlandish for this team to go out in the second round, looking at how the last few years have ended up. Now, should they have made it by this point? Yes, absolutely. I'm not saying that they're not good enough or that they shouldn't have done it, but I don't know that the reputation is necessarily unfair. I think if they had gotten the right breaks in certain times, it would have been able to happen. So this year, I think in order to change the perception, they need to get out of the second round. But in order to really do it, they'll have to play the Spurs in the second round and beat the Spurs in the second round. If they get an easier matchup, if they get, I don't know, like just Portland in the second round, you know, a good team but not an elite team, or if they get Houston in the second round, I realize I just named two teams the Clippers have lost to in the playoffs the last 2 years.
Yeah.
But again, these are teams that they should beat in a hypothetical playoff series this year. I don't think anyone's going to really respect that series win very much. I think if they beat San Antonio in the second round, that's a really respectable series win. If you lose to San Antonio in the second round, that's all. It's like it closes the book. That's a billion seasons in a row of the same exact thing.
Yeah.
You know, you're one of the good teams, and you play another one of the good teams, and they beat you because they're a little better every single time.
Yeah.
But what's interesting? Yes.
Go ahead.
Yeah. What's interesting is that even if they do that, I don't think it's reasonable to expect them to beat Golden State. Even, you know, I have high hopes and everything. I really want them to beat Golden State, but I don't think it's a reasonable expectation to have. So it would be interesting to see if they do that and lose to Golden State in five games in the Western Conference Finals, are people still going to be saying blow it up and the Clippers are chokers and all that? I don't know. And I don't think it would be a fair thing to say necessarily. And I don't think trading Chris Paul for two role players and a first round pick is going to all of a sudden make you be better than Golden State. So I don't think blowing it up does anything. So I think the Clippers are who they are at this point. They're a very good team that keeps plugging away, and they're waiting to get breaks. And we might look back on this era in Clipper basketball a decade from now and say, man, that was a really good team for an extended period of time, but they just never got the right breaks to win a championship. Or maybe we will say they, you know, one year, whether this year, next year or something, they did get the right breaks. But I don't think there's some – I think it would at least be incorrect for there to be a mindset that says the Clippers aren't good enough, because they've competed with and beat these teams at various points in time over the last 5 years. They just need the right – they need things to shake out the right way. So it would definitely be – you know, the narratives are kind of infuriating with how – and I'm sure you know, because you just won a finals and the year before you lost the finals, and both of those carry kind of crazy narratives with them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of the opinion that the Clippers are, like, really, really good. Like, it's just, like, they're so good. I think almost, like, not in saying, like, you or I, but I think, like, as a general, like, basketball community, like, we underrate them at times.
I think so, too, but
They're so good. And it's, like, I understand they haven't won, but it's, like, so many things have just gone the wrong way. And, like, that happens. And, like, you can't, like, you know, like, say, well, they would have won. Like, there's no way to know if they went, like, if they beat the Warriors 2 years ago or something. Or if, like, last year, if Blake doesn't, you know, get hurt and, like, break
Blake his hand, and
like,
Chris they, and JJ all yeah, like, get hurt yeah, in the
like,
first round.
If everyone's healthy, like, they get out of that the gauntlet of the West. But, like, they're really good. And it's, like, at some of the times, it's just, like, I think we just have to, like, appreciate that, like, they're really good. They're a high-level team. They're really, really good this year. And not every team, like, wins a title. And like, but like, yeah. Then, because it's like we put so much weight on one thing that it's like maybe we're overlooking just like appreciating something that's really, really good that's like staring us in the face, even if it's a little bit flawed.
Yeah, and I don't think it's crazy to say, especially if Chris and Blake both re-sign this summer and keep, you know, they play together, this group stays together for another 3 or 4 years, and they don't win a title. I really think that we might look back on this era of Clipper basketball, how people look back on the Stockton Malone Jazz or the Peyton Sean Kemp Supersonics, where these are teams that we remember. And they're teams that we remember as being very good, but that we know were not championship winning teams. And I don't think that this Clippers team is just going to become irrelevant if they don't win. I kind of get the sense that people are always going to remember the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin Clippers. It's just a matter of if we're going to remember them as how we remember the Dirk Nowitzki Mavericks, who were great for years and then finally won, or if we're going to remember them as the Stockton Malone Jazz, who were really good and were never able to do it.
Yeah. So, Lucas, thanks for coming on, man. I think the listeners are going to learn a lot about the Clippers from this, but if people aren't already following you, excuse me, where can they find you on Twitter? And just tell a little bit about your site if people aren't aware of the blog that you run.
Yeah, so I'm the editor-in-chief of ClipsNation.com, the sister site to Fear the Sword. You can find me on Twitter at Lucas J. Han, ClipsNation at ClipsNationSBN. And we do a lot of great things over the site. I have a really good staff that, you know, helps me out a lot. I'm really proud of the work that they do. We especially pride ourselves in game coverage. We do in-depth previews and recaps. We cover lots of news and analysis. And I think I strive to make it the type of thing that's not just for Clippers fans. You know, I don't want to limit my market. So I hope it's something that everyone can come to read about the Clippers rather than what Clippers fans can come to read about the Clippers, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, thanks for having me, Chris. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, of course. Make sure you go read the site, follow Lucas. You're at Lucas J. Han, correct, on Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go give him a follow. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at CWM Writes. Follow the pod on Twitter at Lockdown Cavs. Still drop those mailbag questions in for next Monday. Get those questions in. We'll answer them. And, you know, we'll be back tomorrow. We'll recap this game and give you a little teaser of Cavs Bulls on Friday. This has been Chris. This has been Lucas. This has been Locked On Cavs.